Well, this is part of our problem, son. Little Tayani, who lives far away in the western shores of the kingdom, is only 9 years old. She is not yet part of a temple, and she has never heard of the White Eagle, apart from dreams, of course, for the eagle visits her every night. Would you like me to go and find the child, Barkansir? Shall I bring her to Isram? No, this is not what the gods have decided. She will have to find the Order of the White Eagle first, and join a temple where she will receive her preliminary initiations. This will probably take some years. Then she will have to find you by herself. Of course, I will help her a lawful little bit. But the gods have in soft hyphen insisted that she should first undergo certain trials that will fortify her soul and help recover the unique strength of character that was hers in former lives. So what am I to do? Let her come to you. As I have said, I will help, as much as the gods permit. Then you must teach her. Give her as much knowledge and power as you possess can. And let her create a beautiful nest for herself and her eagles in the dem soft hyphen pool of Isram. Barkansir stopped walking, pointing to Gervin's heart with the index fin soft hyphen gur of his large hand. He plunged his fiery black eyes into him and added, "And more than anything else, Gervin, be her friend." The tall man paused, then gen soft hyphen ply hammered, "Her teacher, her father, and her friend, Gervin. I am asking this from you as a personal favor, not just because of the flying dragons, but for me. Will you please take care of Tayani?" Surprised by the solemn tone of the request, Gervin closed his eyes for a sec soft hyphen ond. Then his thunderous gaze met Barkansir's. "My word of thunder. I will take care of Tayani. Thank you, friend," Barkansir answered softly, as if from high in the spheres. The two men started walking again. For a long time they remained silent, enjoying the deep space of compassion which Barkansir had created by not speaking an order but by humbly requesting a favor, and the friendship that Gervin had started by giving his word with total sincerity. As they were passing a small pond which the beast of the underworld had forgotten to suck dry, Barkansir declared in a joyful voice, "By the way, Gervin, I will send you a present with Tayani." "A present?" Gervin smiled with curiosity. No doubt a present from Barkansir would be special. "A little boy." Gervin frowned, slightly worried at the idea of all these children who were on their way to him. Reading his thoughts, Barkansir burst out laughing. "And the flying dragons will send you another one. But later. Another present, or another little boy?" Gervin asked with a touch of consoft hyphen cern, as he suddenly saw his family swelling out of all proportion. "Both." Barkansir teased him, laughing. What a beautiful mother Marco would have been for these children, Gervin thought to himself as they passed the remnants of a huge fig tree. Breaking unsoft hyphened of their own weight, all the main branches had collapsed, leaving a shaven to soft hyphen stem pointing to heaven like a finger in reproach. Barkansir felt Gervin's grief. "Are you drinking bitter herbs, friend?" "I guess I am." Gervin did not try to hide the wave of sorrow that was welling in his chest. "Will you tell me more?" Gervin shrugged his shoulders. "For years, I have heard Orest repeat this principle of thunder, truth can't wait. And I thought I did my best to live up to it. But in one set of circumstances, I forgot to apply the holy principle." He sighed deeply. "And now that I have lost a treasure, I can't blame anyone but myself, can I? There is not much that can be done about this, friend. The past cannot be changed. Better think about building the future." Gervin thought of asking Barkansir a question, but decided it was futile and kept silent, contemplating the carcass of a deer rotting by the side of the path. Bobro's black heart had done so well that no birds of prey were left to clean up the dead meat. Directing his gaze to the other side of the path, Gervin saw more carcasses. One of them still stood on its four legs, so sudden had been the pounding of death. Looking up, Gervin smelled the stench that hung in the mists. As he realized the question would not let go of him, he turned to his friend, Barkansir, knower of past, present and future events, "Would you do me a great favor?" "What?" "Answer a question for me." "Was it bound to be, and planned by the Lords of Destiny, and wanted by the gods, that Marka should become a high priestess of Morchasek rather than Gervin's wife. No, it was not, the omniscient sage replied, matter of fact. Had you asked her in time, Marka would have become your wife. Gervin pushed his lips forward and nodded. What Barkan Seer had said, he already knew very well. But for some strange reason he felt better after hearing it. How could I be such a sleeper? He blamed himself. But in the desperate dryness of the forest, he found it impossible to cry. Barkan Seer's presence of liquid gold came towards him. It did not erase the sorrow, but it added a depth of spirit to it. Will you tell me what bitter herbs are waiting for me at this ceremony you are taking me to? No bitter herbs, Gervin. Only the unavoidable changes that accompany the passing of time. Barkan Seer had spoken with so much softness that Gervin immediately guessed. He stopped, closed his eyes and took his head in his hands. Oh, no. You are not going to tell me that Orest is about to leave his body? Barkan Seer put his hand on Gervin's shoulder, shining the infinite Kumpa's soft hyphen sign of the Mother of the Light into him. He waited a few seconds and said, only a great sacrifice will stop the tidal wave of dark forces that Bobrose the Giant has unleashed from the Valley of the Necromancer. Orest must now give his life, that a massive clearing be performed and the evil magic sent back into the abyss. In the Fields of Stars, on his way back from the Flying Dragons, Gervin had sung a hymn to the Great Mother for having given him a teacher like Orest and a friend like Marka. As he sang, the Great Mother had smiled, for she could feel how strong his love for them was. Having lost one, Gervin was now about to lose the other. For 1 second, his consciousness was back in the infinity of space, and he looked down to the kingdom, wondering if he wanted to be part of a world where Orest would be no longer, and Marka would be locked in a cell of the Tower of Morchasek. Gervin, Barkan Seer called him back, this is not all. As Orest, Grandmaster of Thunder, departs for the Fields of Peace, he must be replaced by a new Thunderbolt Bearer. You are the one, Gervin. Heard from the Fields of Stars, where gigantic clouds of light and colorful nebulae drifted mindlessly under the watchful eye of a space matrix, the news sounded innocuous enough. But when he found himself back in his body and heard it a second time, Gervin was appalled. Until then, he had often thought that the high office of Grand Master of Thunder was wondrous, like a vast Tsar soft hyphen cred script with doors open to all the mysteries of the creation. But now he real soft hyphenized the solitude that awaited him in the crypt. The mists had thickened around the Tamen. Because of nature's grief, twice soft hyphen light brought no reddish hues, only darkness. Is there no chance I could depart with Master Orest, and follow him into the Fields of Peace? Gervin asked tentatively. We need you here, Gervin. A monumental task awaits you, a work with far-reaching consequences. Dramatic changes are about to take place in the King's soft hyphen dom, so much so that our lineage will have to withdraw into the Fields of Peace. You will be the last of the Thunderbolt Bearers in the kingdom for a long, long time. You are the one we have chosen to secure the transition, and the transfer to the Fields of Peace of an immense archive where the Atlantean lore will be kept. Gervin nodded, contemplating the still, thickening mists. 1.4 The great sacrifice of the Thunderbolt Bearer Barkan Seer and Gervin arrived at the plain of Ereba with the first light of dawn. There, an extraordinary vision was waiting for them. A great fire had been lit. Behind it, Orest was sitting in meditation, his eyes closed, his head covered with the hood of his brown gown. Gervin immediately recognized him by his long, curly, silvery gray beard and the special light in his aura. Rand Grisset, his son, was meditating on his right. S. Revan and young Melchard, two other brother disciples of Gervin, were on his left. Orest, Grandmaster of Thunder, had engaged all his power. Chanting ancient hymns of the lore, he had awakened a huge column of light which started in the pyre and ascended high in the sky, where it disappeared into the gray mists. The majestic obelisk of light stood erect like a gigantic lightning rod, ready to con soft hyphen vey Orest's offering to the sky of the gods. But the most incredible part of the scene was the assembly of 100 Masters of Thunder who had descended from the spheres to take part in the Saxsoft-Riffis and the installation ceremony of the new Thunderbolt Bearer. Never in the kingdom had Gervin contemplated so much power. Dressed in their long brown robes, they stood still and silent, forming two rows which delineated a broad alley starting from the pyre. They faced each other. The space between them turned into a corridor of mind-boggling shimmers and fast-moving lights of all colors. Oh, my God! Gervin shed tears of awe. These are some of the Thunderbolt Bearers who preceded you, Gervin. Each of them was a Grand Master of Thunder. Bark and Seer slowly led Gervin to the entrance of the illuminated alley. They have come to communicate their powers to you. The plain of Ereba was a large, flat, empty space with no trees. Where it had been green and lush, now it was grey and barren. In this unreal landscape, Rensoft-Deared even more weary by the complete silence and the uncertain glimmers of dawn, Gervin found himself at the entrance of a temple of light. At the other end of the alley stood the shining obelisk rooted in the fire, with Orest behind it. Now that he had taken his position for the ritual, Gervin could no longer see Orest. But Orest enveloped him with his presence and his love, and he spoke to him through the space. Gervin, my child in thunder and dear friend, the great day has arrived. All glory to the teacher. Gervin gave his thanks as he always did when he met his master. But this time he did not say the words joyfully. Not yet adjusted to the unexpected turn of destiny, his heart was heavy. I wish I could be stronger, Orest. There is not one thing in the world I could want more than to be capable of conducting this sacrifice instead of you, that my life might be given to negate the magic of Bobros, and your precious life not wasted. This kingdom is going to be so sad and empty without you, and so dull. Gervin, shining soul, you could very well have performed this sacrifice in Soft-Hyphen instead of me, and reduced Bobros to ashes of oblivion by your own great Sacri Soft-Hyphen Fice. But by leaving my body today, I will take advantage of these unfortunate circumstances to achieve a massive transfer of forces into you. The evil Elsoft-Hyphen mental slime that Bobros has spread across our county will be my offering to the Sky of the Gods, feeding the greatest fire ritual I have ever conducted. Aided by these 100 Thunderbolt Bearers, I am going to shake the Sky of the Gods, Gervin. Let me tell you, the gods will remember this. And by tonight, so much power will have been concentrated into your Thunder Wand that nothing in the kingdom will be able to stand in your way. And you will need this power, Gervin. At the end of the great task which the Masters of Thunder have pre-soft-hyphen paired for you, you will have to perform a ritual of even greater significance and magnitude than this one, the Archive Transfer. Who better than you could perform a ritual as important as this, Orest? Gervin, your time has come. Now it is up to you, Ran Grosset, S. Revan and the others to carry out the task. And that task will be enormous. Preparing the fields for the Archive Transfer will take you at least 20 years. I am not leave soft hyphening you an easy legacy, my friend. But I trust you will succeed. You have what it takes. And from the fields of peace, I will be with you all the way through. Besides this, you will be the most invested Thunderbolt Bearer ever. Look in front of you, Gervin. At sunset, when you walk the corridor of light, all these great sages will ignite your Thunder Wand with their powers, and by the time you reach the pyre, I will be lucky if there is still one thing I can give you that you will not have already received. The light in the corridor had become brighter. Against a background of moonlight silver, pink quartz and dark sapphire hues, white-blue lightning-like shafts zapped wildly from one Master of Thunder to the other. The glow seemed so solid, and the shimmering waves so tempestuous that Gervin one soft-hyphen deed if he would have to fight his way through the light. Gervin, there are many things I would have liked to tell you. But the time is coming. After the ritual, Bark and Seer will give you all the instructions you need. Farewell, my friend in the lore, and thank you for being who you are. You have given me great joy. All glory to the teacher. Glory to the God who was in the beginning, who is, and who shall be. We shall meet again in the fields of peace. You stay still and do nothing, Bark and Seer whispered into Gervin's ear. Your role begins at sunset. Orest was the first one to chant. He intoned a slow, low-pitched recitation of one of the most ancient hymns of the lore, which praised the Mother of the Light for having initiated the creation. Concurrently, he threw ashes into the fire, and drew with his consciousness a whisk of the dark energies that Bob Rose had spread through Nidavan and beyond. The little black cloud moved up into the obelisk of light and vanished. One of the greatest clearing rituals of all times had begun. 2 days' walk from there, in the gloomy heart of the valley of the Necrosoft-Mancer, Bob Rose the giant, whose vision was great, sensed that a fire ritual was underway. He shrugged one huge shoulder in contempt, considering the tidal wave of black sludge that he had made the valley vomit onto the county. This clearing was no great threat to his evil plans. At their present pace, the brown piglets, as he called the Masters of Thunder whose gathering he was observing in his third eye, would need more than a year to clear just the plain of Ereba. At the second hymn, Ran Groset, S. Revin and Melcher joined voices with Orest. The four men pulled small clouds of Bobro's dark influence into the Kolsoft-Um of light. But at the third hymn, everything changed. Following Barkansir, the 100 Thunderbolt bearers started projecting the voice. An awesome sound was released as expansive waves of incandescent energies poured from their mouths. The glow in the corridor went from bright to blinding. The obelisk of light rippled in width, and ugly clouds of black smoke were drawn into it by the power of the hymns. Down in the valley of the Necromancer, Bob Rose frowned. He dropped the piece of raw meat he was eating for breakfast and watched with curiosity to see what would happen to the strange column of light, once attacked by his black smoke. To Bob Rose's dismay, it soon appeared that instead of being dimmed, the obelisk was becoming brighter by the minute. On the plain of Ereba, the deluge of voice resounded unabated. The chanted hymns, rendered alive by the power of the voice, seemed insatiable. They swallowed larger and larger clouds of black energy and consumed them in the fire of the obelisk, sending them up as an offering to the sky of the gods. Soon the column of light became so wide that Orest and his disciples were engulfed by it, and it kept growing until it encompassed the entire alley and the 100 Soft-Dread Thunderbolt bearers, Barkansir and Gervin with them. United in the light, they projected the voice relentlessly. It was not yet 8 in the morning. Bob Rose, worried, withdrew into his cave and started preparing his defense. In the temple of Israim, Marco had been the first to sense the seismic waves of light coming from the clearing in Ereba. In her small cell in the Tower of Mulchasek, the air was thick with sorrow, for she had been crying all night, and the day before, and the night before that. But as soon as the Thunderbolt bearers started projecting the voice, the room shone with white light, and she felt Gosoft-Van's presence with her. Through the space, she tried to call him. In response, the light became brighter, and Gervin's presence became stronger. No words were exchanged, but the force was so intense, and the imprint in the space so clear, that not once in the coming 34 years that Marco spent meditating and praying in that room, did Gervin's presence disappear. It remained with her and constantly supported her, not just in the first years, when she fought against herself not to run away and throw herself in the arms of the man she could not forget, but also in the last years, when the deterioration of the energy fields in Atlantis became such that Mulchasek's light could hardly be felt any longer, and his high priestesses started dying one after the other from despair and from boredom. That morning, a few chapels away from the Tower of Mulchasek, Muriji the prophetess caught the vision of the obelisk of light, and she heard the voice of the Thunderbolt bearers. O my lord Melchizedek! Lucina! She called her young friend, Lucina. Go and tell them, quick! Hey? Lucina of the green robe had fallen asleep in her meditation. She rubbed her eyes. Tell who, Muriji? Everyone, Lucina, tell everyone. And tell them to send a message to the temple of Lassia immediately. But tell them to keep it very quiet. It's Probasoft-Blya secret ceremony. But tell them what? Orest of the brown robe is transmitting his power to Gervin. All his power. Everything. It might even end up in a great sacrifice. And from her prophetic vision the little priestess added, and then Gervin will have to go and challenge Bobrose the giant, and one of them will die. Muridji of the purple robe, whose gossip was a central part of the Kamasoft-Nication system in Isfraim, sent messages through the space to all her friends, who in turn warned their friends, and in a matter of minutes all the priests and priestesses of Isfraim knew. The cooks dropped their saucepans, the gardeners their bags of seeds, and the masons left their construction sites. All converged to the chapels and sat still and silent. And those priests whose normal function was to sit still in their chapel sat stiller and more silently. The cows, who were always extremely sensitive to the spiritual vibrations of the temple, refrained from mooing. In the small lake outside the first hall of Melchizedek, the swans became still too, and the fishes swam cautiously. In this cosmic hush they all tuned into the gigantic clearing from a distance, and they received the light. By the end of the morning, so much of Bobro's evil slime had been offered to the sky of the gods that in Isfraim city, the heavy atmosphere of fear and a soft hyphen spare which the pestilence had created began to clear. Some of those who had fallen ill the night before stopped convulsing and they woke up, stunned at still being alive. Many of them even wondered if perhaps they were dead, after all, and when they returned to their normal activities they looked at each other sus soft hyphen viciously. Unsure whether they were surrounded by ghosts, but not daring to ask, in case they themselves were the ghosts among the living. When noon came, the forests of Nodavan had been entirely cleared. The first birds had returned. In some areas it had even started to rain again. Bobrose, furious to see the clearing ritual so successful, launched a massive counter-offensive. He did not waste any time with lower forms of magic. He went straight to the abysmal crevasse, which lay close to the marshes outside his cave. There, long ago, when the kingdom was still young, Harmag the next soft hyphen romancer, a son of Ozael the Watcher, had called on the ominous powers which had made the valley turn dark, and the nature spirits evil, and the mists thick and menacing, and the landscape atrociously gloomy and full of shadows and visions of hell, after which the valley had been known as the Valley of the Necromancer. Bobrose, who believed he was the descendant of Harmag the Necromancer through a long line of Nephilim giants, raised defiant hands towards heaven and turned his head down to the abyss. Using the voice, he mumbled a mysterious invocation which he had not learnt from Bobrose his father but from Bobrose his great-grandfather, and which former giants of the Bobrose lineage had passed on from generation to generation, perhaps ever since the time of Harmag himself. The dark vibrations of death began pouring out of his mouth, evoking an instant response. The crevasse vomited a flood of slime, and the valley instantly turned darker. Furious winds swept the marshes, to the jubilant delight of the evil Narsoft hyphen spirits who, ever since the time of Harmag, has been completely out of their minds and rejoiced only when they smelled a disaster on its way. Soon an ominous umbra overtook the entire area of Nodavan, frightening away the birds that had ventured back, and drying out the first rains. High above, the denizens of the worlds of the gods looked down to the king's soft hyphen dom and watched with interest, but also with some degree of alarm. The forces that Bobrose the giant was releasing were so powerful that they could easily get out of control, flooding the entire kingdom with pitch-black sludge and upset soft hyphenting the balance of the spheres. Down in the kingdom, in the citadel which the Nephilim giants had built for themselves on top of steep cliffs at the extreme end of the eastern peninsula, so as to proudly receive the first sunrays that swept the kingdom every day, the word soon spread that Bobrose the necromancer was enraged, and about to end soft hyphen gauge in a duel of magic. The giants, tuning into the powerful fields of energy which allowed them to spy on just about anything in the kingdom, held their breath and watched, wondering who would emerge victorious out of this titanic confrontation. Neither above nor below, but from the No-Erianness where he forever dwells, Ahriman, the Prince of Darkness, also watched with interest, ready to strike like a beast of prey hidden in the night. Like the gods, he knew well that Bobrose could lose control over the forces he had unleashed. Were this to happen, he would be washed away, and the aphotic tidal wave of black slime would present a perfect opportunity for Ahriman to launch a devastating attack on the King Soft-Dom, spreading plagues, wars and chaos. In the plain of Ereba, the column of light had become so wide that it not only comprehended the alley and the 100 Masters of Thunder, but the entire plain itself, and some of the surrounding forests. When they heard the abyss re-soft hyphen sounding with the evil clamor and when they saw the horrendous filth erupting out of the depths, the thunderbolt bearers raised their voices. Together, they projected the word of thunder, which is the voice of the earth and the highest power of the sky of the gods. It was awesome, unthinkable. Trembling from her own will, the earth shook, again and again. And from higher up than the gods, lightning struck the obelisk which by now had become a gigantic flame of light, visible from all the spheres. And the hymns of the law, rendered ever more hungry by so much fire, started swallowing the darkness that was covering Nidavellir. Bob rose to raise his voice, and from the abyss he called on the dregs at the end of time, and on the endless darkness that is to engulf all things at the end, when everything is accomplished, or much earlier, if the dark side can win. Above the clouds, the gods frowned, wondering if they had been careless in letting things go so far. Far in the east of the kingdom, the Nephilim giants shouted cheers of Impra-Soft-Agement which Bob Rose never heard, so loud was his own shouting while he drew sludge from the abyss. Ahriman, cold, impassive, precise, kept observing. The abysmal crevasse which Bob Rose had invoked was turning into a volcano of doom, spilling darkness instead of lava. Proud of his works, Bob Rose laughed, convinced not one power in the creation could resist him. But the insatiable hymns of the law swallowed the darkness as soon as it came out of the volcano, converting it into an offering of light which ascended through the obelisk. Bob Rose, pulling with all the strength of his kidney and calling on all the next soft hyphen romancers of his lineage for help, drew yet more darkness from the abyss. But the more soot he manifested, the hungrier the hymns of the thunderbolt bearers became, and the more darkness was converted into light. Bob Rose saw that the light was gaining the edge, slowly but surely, and in soft hyphen roar he realized that Orest's clearing could result not only in stopping the plague he had caused, but also in cleaning up the entire valley of the necromancer. In a glimpse, he saw himself becoming the shame of his lineage, the destroyer of the beauty of black arts that Harmag had created, and which had lasted ever since then. Seeing that time was working against him, and knowing from his prophetic sight that Orest had vowed to leave his body at sunset, Bob Rose sought recourse to an ancient device of magic. It was a trick that his ancestors had used in the distant past, when many more things used to be possible on Earth, and time was nowhere near as rigid as it had become with time. Bob Rose, son of Bob Rose, tried to speed up the course of the sun, to make twilight arrive early. This was his fatal mistake. The magic charms which, long ago, could control time, had long ceased to have the predictable effects they had had in the time of Harmag. The truth was, time, the destroyer of all things, had long since destroyed its own magic. Bob Rose had hardly spoken his dangerous formula when a tremulousness of all things made itself felt in the valley of the necromancer. The gods held their breath. The Nephilim giants of the eastern peninsula became pale. Ahriman smiled. The abysmal crevasse became hesitant, as if taken by self-doubts. The soot it vomited not only dropped in volume, but it too seemed to be unsure as to whether it really existed. The evil enthusiasm of the valley and the orgasmic frenzy that animated the perverted nature spirits looked at each other in Dispy-Soft-Leaf. The ghastly winds wavered, uncertain in which direction to blow. Bob Rose, rendered incredulous by his own spell, wondered whether all this was really happening. But in a flash he realized that a complete disaster was imminent. He caught sight of a wave of destruction that respected nothing, not even itself, and their soft hyphen four threatened everything with extinction, including himself. Drawing on all his power and might, he howled with the voice to seal the crevasse and to stop everything before the unstoppable was unleashed. For a minute or two, the entire valley of the necromancer wobbled, while groaning bubbles plopped from the marshes. Then the spell vanished, and an uncannily peaceful silence followed. For one second the valley recovered its former self, when it was lush and joyful, and when happy cattle used to graze on its rolling slopes. "Oh, shit!" Bob Rose exclaimed. In a desperate attempt to restore darkness, he turned towards the abysmal crevasse. "Harmag. Harmag. I call onto your venom."